I'm speechless. Catherine was my teacher for quite a while. She still is. I mean, our teachers never go away. They imprint and we take them with us wherever we go. Is this, are you all able to hear? Are you hearing my heartbeat? Thump, thump, thump of the heartbeat. Okay. All right. Okay. Two thumbs now, Kathy. Thank you. Some of you obviously didn't have any place else to go this evening, not mentioning any other names. I appreciate your all being here. Let's see. As I remember, it was like this. And I have until 7:25 exactly. So I'll try to figure out where that is on my phone. All righty. The reason I braved traffic was that I didn't get here at 12 so I could enjoy being in Santa Cruz because I was enjoying rereading Ryokan's poems, looking for the right one, or other things of similar nature. It's my way. And one of my ways, and I just discovered that I think it was in Catherine's book, she talks about Dogen's Bits and Pieces. And I don't know where it came from, but I'm a person of bits and pieces. And that's what I have to offer. They're not necessarily sound bits and pieces, but maybe close to that. My mind goes in a lot of different places. One place it went, for some reason, I don't know why I picked up Buddhism and Zen, Senzaki and McCandless. It's a really old book, and it's charming. And anyway, as long as I have it in my hands, let me begin with this. The Buddha body is omnipresent. Each sentient being beholds it. Through aspiration and karma relation, as it dwells eternally on this seat, right where we are, of meditation. I don't know who wrote it, but it's interesting. There's an asterisk, it's four lines, and then there's more. I'm not going to go into more of it. But one of the pieces in here I found myself reading and enjoying very much, and I'm going to read part of it, and I'd like for the first person who recognizes it, or maybe the second or third, to raise your hand. It's a different translation, shall we say. Truth is perfect and complete in itself. It's not something just newly discovered. It has always existed. Truth is not very far away. It is ever near. Do not try to walk to it, because your every step leads not away from it. Do not follow some other person's thoughts, but learn to listen to the voice within yourself. Your body and your mind will blend in unity, and you will realize the oneness of all life. Even a delicate moment of your dualistic thought will prevent you from entering the palace of meditation. Those who talk much about realization are usually wandering outside its gates and will have some struggle before they enter the palace of meditation. Buddha Shakyamuni meditated for 6 years, and Bodhidharma meditated 9 years. The practice of meditation is not a method for the attainment of realization, but is enlightenment itself. I thought more hands would go up with that one. Your search among books, word upon word, may lead you to the depths of the cognition world, but it is not the way to receive the reflection of your true self. When you have thrown off your ideas as to mind and body, you will see the original person in full. Zen is nothing but the actualization of truth. Therefore, the longings, which are followed by actions, are not the true attitude of Zen at all. To attain the blessedness of meditation, you should begin practice with a pure motive and a firm determination. Your room for meditation must be clean and quiet. I'm going to stop there. Before I get to put your right hand on your left thigh with your palm up and do the hokey pokey part. Okay. This is actually a signed document. And it says D-O-G-E-N. So, I don't doubt my practice. I love my practice. I find that sometimes I doubt the trappings of the practice. But, you know, they're protecting me as I speak. I remember Gene coming and talking to our group, and he brought the nyoi, or there's another name for it, but akotsu. Yes, and he stuck it out right about here, and he said, it's the long tongue of the Buddha. I just loved that. But it's also used as a prop. And it's a support, I suppose, would be a nicer way of saying it. It's a support. It's a way of supporting our practice. And my robes support me. And there's some people they don't actually support, but they actually cause some people to question my practice and theirs. So they're good. They're good for that too. They push buttons sometimes. Ryokan comes later when I'm retiring. And five skandhas will come if I have lots of extra time. But one of the things about the five skandhas I do want to mention. I have actually one quote here. Edward Kanze saying, at present it's sufficient to bear in mind that the first steps towards wisdom consists in getting the skandhas into view. This requires considerable knowledge, practice, and skill, but it is the indispensable basis for all that follows. And getting our getting a view of ourselves, reflecting ourselves, is difficult to do. We need as much help as we can possibly get. And because the minute somebody shines light on us, we scurry off like cockroaches. You know, it's hard sometimes to see ourselves. And I don't know what I was doing, but the other day I held the mirror just right, and I didn't recognize what was in it. I mean, it was the briefest of reactions, but it was like, you know, oh, that's you. It was quite wonderful. But it's hard to catch ourselves that way. Those are rare moments. And sometimes we behave badly and we know we have. So that's a way of catching ourselves, or somebody reminds us of something about ourselves and we really don't want to hear it. But all of these are so important to accepting who we are. And and I suppose it's going to be a constant process, because I started practice. This is a way-seeking mind. I mean, it's being built as a way-seeking mind right before your eyes. I mean, this is my way-seeking mind. And and also, once in a while, I forget what I was saying. When I divert like that, then I forget the last thought. So you'll forgive me if I just move on, okay? It's both a blessing and a curse of aging. And I love it when people who are about 40 talk about, oh, I guess that was in a senior moment. And I think, oh, yeah, just wait, you know. You've got so much more coming. It's so wonderful. I don't cackle quite like that, but... gosh, the water is so clear, I can see all the way to the bottom. Thank you. So, Suzuki Roshi, this comes out of a book called Not Always So, Ed Brown edited Suzuki Roshi's talks and put this book together. But this piece of it, wherever you are, enlightenment is there, or things as it is. And this is Suzuki Roshi. In our practice, the most important thing is to realize that we have Buddha nature. We don't talk, I don't hear that talked about too often, but when I read it earlier, I realized how nice that is. We already have Buddha nature. We might not know it. Maybe we have a hard time even seeing it in other people, but we already have this. Intellectually, we may know this, but it's rather difficult to accept. Our everyday life is in the realm of good and bad, in the realm of duality. But while Buddha nature is found in the realm of the absolute, where there is no good or bad, there is a twofold reality. Our practice is to go both beyond the realm of the good and bad and to realize the absolute. I rewrote it a little bit, saying our practice is to both go beyond and to accept the realm of good and bad and to realize the absolute. It's so important to accept the realm of the realm of duality. It's inescapable, you know, unless we want to start taking medications for problems that arise when you only live in the realm of the absolute. I think we could all use more of it, but we don't want just one or just the other. I think it's what is called the middle way, actually. So, so he refers to somebody by the name of Hashimoto Roshi. Did he come to San Francisco? I think he did, didn't he, at some point, Hashimoto Roshi? I think he was very strict with the forms or something. Anyway, Hashimoto Roshi, a famous Zen master who passed away in 1965, said that the way we Japanese cook is to prepare each ingredient separately. Rice is here, pickles are over there. But when you put them in your tummy, you don't know which is which. The soup, rice, pickles, and everything get all mixed up. That's the way the world of the absolute, that's the way of the world of the absolute. As long as rice, pickles, and soup remain separate, they're not working. You're not being nourished. I thought that was good. you've got to mix it all up, and then it works. That is like your intellectual understanding or book knowledge. It remains separate for your actual life. So, so we actually need to practice mixing things up quite a good deal in order, and to be observant of it, to have the one who is watching participating as completely as you possibly can. And still we have a hard time seeing ourselves, coming into a place where we understand who we are and find ourselves a little looser in the world, I would say. I sort of play at the fringes of looseness, but I'm not loose. And if I was loose, I wouldn't fit into this quite as well as I do. I do mean loose by being kind of like crazy wisdom loose. I mean that kind of loose. I've experienced my mind that way, and I find it frightening. So I retreat. I retreat when I get close to that. And this is one reason why I might find myself disrobing on some level, if you will, and doing a different kind of practice for a while, just to see where my mind might go. I've been doing this practice in a fairly strict fashion, a fairly orthodox fashion, as Patrick said, for a good 30 years, you know, sort of full time. And I think I need to open some windows, you know, not that I would lose my practice, but I might lose myself in a good way. And this brings me to something else that I do think one of the reasons I came into practice was taking psychedelics. It opened doors, you know, the Huxley book, the Doors of Perception. Those doors were open for me, and it made it possible for me to have a different path, really. So that was important to me. I just said that because I didn't just say it because, but it's true. I guess what I found was a trip to Peru for ayahuasca, and I thought, you know, maybe that's something. It's something that Joan Halifax, who's head of Upaya Zen Center, has a. It came through her website in any case, and I thought, well, that might be a gentle way for me to enter into this, a different way of thinking. Anyway,
did you do that?
Not yet. No. I have a dog, and the first time I had a dog, I had just divorced, and I thought it would be easier to get rid of a dog than a husband. And then I realized that I was stuck with the dog. And now I have a dog and I'm devoted to my dog. And I feel like my dog has been, in a way, it's my new mind. I wake up in the middle of the night and I lead her outside and... Yeah, so I have a devotional practice actually with her, and I feel very fortunate for it. So I'm not going anywhere right now. Let me see what time it is. So I do want to talk about retiring, and but just before I leave that, I want to talk about the self just one more time. I don't know where this was on, it came from New Yorker magazine, and I do not know a man by the name of Gaiman, but he seems to write books about Norse mythology. And there was just one line that appealed to me very much. The first ancestor of the Aesir is not born when some greater god decrees it, but when some hornless cow of mysterious origins licks a block of ice until a head appears, and then a body. I thought that was a hoot. The earliest humans are crafted from logs of ash and elm that happen to wash up on the seashore. Their carver is Odin, the highest and oldest of the Aesir, who, now get this, who must sacrifice himself to himself on the gallows of the world tree in order to attain the full measure of divine wisdom. Now, how's that? I think we have it pretty easy. I mean, that's supposed to be an encouragement to practice. That we do not have to hang ourselves, you know, on the gallows of the world tree in order to attain full measure of the divine wisdom. Or do we? Ah, or do we? Do we? We do, don't we? Oh my. Well, anyway, I think it's a good question, a good point, and I think it's a beautiful image. I really love the hornless cow of mysterious origins licking a block of ice until a head appears. It's beautiful. It's funny and it's also poignant. Earliest humans crafted from logs of ash. I mean, we used to be believers. I mean, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. Um, when I say it like that, I mean real believers. Believers in fanciful things somehow, you know. And, you know, good Lord, it's all fanciful. How am I going to retire? Let's see. One of the chants that we do at Monterey Bay Zen Center, we use the we chant the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, and I think I'm just going to read a few lines of it because it's easy. It's easy. It's how we could be practicing. We could be practicing this way. Or maybe practice leads this way. Maybe that's where I'm leading myself in terms of my retirement here. And this was written by Shito, who did the merging of difference in unity. And his dates are 700 to 790. And this is what he says. He says, "I have built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside or outside, or in between. He's not stuck. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. He's retired. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. He can do what he damn well pleases. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 feet square, an old man illumines forms in their nature." In 10 feet square is Vimalakirti's hut, if you remember, that housed the universes. Perishable or not, the original master is present. You've all read this, I'm sure, but and probably Ben read it to you when he came and talked to you a year or so ago. Well, I'll read the last part here. "Let go of hundreds of years." I would say let go of eons. "And relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstruction. If you want to know the underlying person, undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now." And in Catherine's book, there was a nice reference to this. Her last paragraph in just one of these talks that she gave, she says, "We have to return to earlier states of innocence to do this practice of inviting forth the despised parts of ourselves. But it can be done. We never know when our practice will touch our own innocent heart." And I'm very touched to be in Catherine's sitting position. It means a great deal to me. And our relationship was perfect. I bless her so often, and I don't know why I just don't hate her. You know, I never did. I never hated her. It was like, what's this? What's going on? What's this about? What have I done wrong? Well, I didn't do anything wrong. Anyway, thank you so very much. Oh, what time is it? Is it exactly? Oh, there is. How about some questions? Oh, sure. Ryokan, thank you. There we go. Yes, thank you so much. Well, where did my life come from? And where will it go? Meditating by the window of my tumble-down hut, I search my heart, absorbed in silence. But I search and search and still don't know where it all began. How will I ever find where it ends? Even the present moment can't be pinned down. Everything changes. Everything is empty. And in that emptiness, this, I, exists only for a little while. How can one say anything is or is not? Best just to hold to these little thoughts, let things simply take their way, and so be natural and at your ease. All my life, too lazy to get ahead, I leave everything to the truth of heaven. In my sack are three measures of rice, by the stove one bundle of sticks. Why ask who's got Satori, who hasn't? What would I know about that fame and gain? Rainy nights here in my thatched hut, I stick out my two legs any old way I please. He ends a couple of other poems with that same line. I stick out my two legs, and I can just see, can't you see these hairy legs? Skinny. They're skinny. We know he's a skinny guy. I stick out my two legs any old way I please. So thank you very much. And questions, opinions, suggestions, thoughts, ideas, songs, Kathy.
I'm first of all, it's beautiful to have you.
Thank you very much.
Your
bits and pieces.
Yes, exactly. You seem to be speaking about this concept of retirement.
Yes.
With a certain relish.
There's yes.
Like a, you know, you emphasize these lines in the grass about he can do anything. And I just would love to hear a little bit more about this. What is this?
Well, I have been caught up in the workings of the Zen Center. And I frankly don't feel I have the heart for it. Just bottom line. I just don't. And I don't know, actually, if there is a place for me there if I'm not involved in it. I do know that it's extraordinarily difficult for me, not for me, for this one, it's hard for me not to be involved. So, you know, I have a tendency, if I'm given a job, to take that job more seriously than I need to. So, it's taken me 80-some-odd years now to figure that out. And I'm so glad I've lived so long. So that's what it's about, Kat. Is that...
Well, yeah, just, you know, it seems like it's a new opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're opening. There's some opening that I'm experiencing.
That's right.
General attitude about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Edie.
Well, it's an opening, so what's next?
what would next be for you?
Well, I'm already doing next.
Oh, this is that. No?
Yeah, it's creativity.
Oh.
And whatever way it shows up in my life.
I see. Good. Lovely. So for me, I'm not sure because I at this point I prefer or just sniffing. just kind of feeling my way with it a little bit. I think it has to come from a different place for me, because it's very easy for me to say, I have this creative practice that I want to do, and there it is. It's over there. So I've done that a good part of my life, and so at this part I'm going through a process of incorporation, shall we say. And Jero, how are you this evening? It's lovely to see you. Chico.
What about retirement for me? I don't know what creative loves or love you have, but the thought about retirement for me is permission to just not be so particularly involved in the world and do the art that I love.
Mm-hmm.
It's music, but I mean, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you play an instrument, or very nice?
Yeah.
And do you read music, or do you?
A little of both, but the thing that I find is that my attention and my ability to learn surprisingly is greater now than it's ever been in my life.
Hmm.
I have less of structure, so more available to this. Thing I love so much. So interesting in this old age.
Mm.
I feel like every year that I get now is a big gift, because I feel like I can learn much more now than I ever could before. So
nice. Congratulations. You have new pathways. Yeah, another one that I read today was he apparently allowed fleas and ticks and things to live on him. and he was, and I read it two different places. This, you know, he'd put them out in the afternoon so that they could have some sunshine. and then invite them home again. I mean, my dog might have fleas occasionally, but I thought that's curious. But yes, I love his quirkiness, and I love the bamboo flute person too. He must be one of your heroes also. Was a leaf flute. It's a leaf flute. It's not a bamboo flute. Anyway, anybody else with a question or a reminiscence of any sort? Patrick.
Well, Sarah, what were we thinking of those early sesshins in Jikochi? We're all fumbling around. Thinking that we were going to get better and something would happen to us when we finally got it right? or do you think we had a little glimpse of that Buddha nature that we already were, that Suzuki led to us?
Do you have any idea for yourself what was in your bodhicitta?
For me,
Are you bodhicitta?
I must have experienced some kind of nourishment from the practice from the very beginning. Mm. Just so, because I kept coming back. Mm-hmm. And it was clumsy and it was cold up at Jikoji, and it was, you know, long days of sitting, and I wasn't so used to sitting. But I must have felt some nourishment just in that, even the fumbling practice, to keep mm-hmm. coming back. I just wonder what your thoughts were. You were
I'm not sure. I was just so I was so full of enthusiasm. I was, I don't know how many yards ahead of myself most of the time. And reining her in has been an interest. It's not like I ever reined anything in, but noticing that she came closer to me made me understand the koan more, at least my version of the my understanding of Seijo and her soul are separated. So for me, it was getting closer to myself. And actually, what I wanted initially was a rakusu. I wanted one of those. That, you know, I mean, I'm thing-oriented. What can I say? It's nothing to be proud of. But I wanted one of those because that's what Catherine had, and that's what all the people at Zen Center had that were like the ones that seemed to know something. So I wanted that. And then I wanted, as soon as I got that, I said to Catherine, I mean, she gave it to me, and immediately I said, now, when can I get my priest robes? You know? And I think that was the for me, you know, it was like, oh. So, but she let me hang on for a number of years longer, torturing me. Lovely, tough love. Yes. Okay, so let's see here where we are. We have 2 minutes to 7:30. Do we have to?
We can have longer a time outside.
Good. Thank you very much. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I bow to become it.